Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails, all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days, and be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. Spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Welcome, fellow law entrepreneurs, to episode 36 of The Law Entrepreneur. My name is Neil Tyra. I'm your host, as always. And today we have another nurse turned attorney visiting us today, Sharon Christie. Sharon, originally, as you'll hear, was a nurse who thought when she went to law school that she was going to focus in on health policy, but instead found herself practicing Social Security disability law. But I think, as interesting as that is, what you as an entrepreneur may find equally or more so interesting is she goes on at great length to talk about how she uses her referral network to build her client base, how she uses seminars and webinars to maintain top-of-mind interest amongst folks who are looking for Social Security disability attorneys, and her use of an advanced email system to continually maintain contact with her potential clients and to develop her her law practice. So it's really an entrepreneurial kind of journey that she's been on as an attorney and has had great success. And as you'll hear, is currently moving her office because she needs more space. So it's a great story to listen to. I thank Sharon a lot. And without further ado, let's listen to Sharon Christie. Hey, Sharon Christie, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, Neil. It is great to be here today.
Well, I do thank you for taking the time to do so, particularly since, as I understand, you're moving your office tomorrow?
Yeah, Friday. So I have two more days to pack up after 7 years, and my staff is busily packing everything. So we are moving, but this is a wonderful break for me.
Okay, well, I'm glad you look at it that way and not as, oh my God, I got to do this and I have so much other stuff to do. I'd rather not. So I appreciate you taking that time. Sharon, tell our audience a little bit about yourself, how you came to be into the practice of law, and where you currently stand.
Okay, sure. Well, I am a second career lawyer. Initially, my first career, I was a nurse. I did that for about 6 years. Then I went to law school. And honestly, really thought I was going to law school to end up in some type of policy, health policy type position. Got into law school and then realized, gee, I sort of like this trial stuff. So when I graduated, I went to work at a big law firm in Baltimore, doing all insurance defense work. And that was great at the time, great training, because associates were second chair on everything and you learned a ton of things. So that was a great experience, but my heart really was not on the defense side. It was very much on the plaintiff side. And I left.
How come I never came up against somebody like you when I was litigating personal injury cases whose heart was really on the plaintiff side?
I don't, because you probably didn't come up against too many nurse attorneys. So I think that might be the key.
That's quite true.
But I switched and I went to work for a small plaintiff's firm in Baltimore. And from there, there were a group of us who split off and set up our own firm and continued to do nothing but personal injury until about 2005 now. I went out on my own and initially continued to do nothing but personal injury. But I have to be honest, I really at that point wanted to find something else. I never dreamed in my career I would hit the point where I'd say, you know, this trial stuff has been great, but I really don't want to do that so much anymore. But I did hit that point. And I had a friend who did nothing but Social Security disability law. And she said to me, gee, you know, I need some help presenting these cases at the hearings to the judges. Would you be interested? And it was perfect timing for me because I really did want to try something else. And I, you know, my first thought was, well, of course, I know how to talk to a judge. That's not going to be hard. I'll have to learn that area of law, but I can do that. And so I was sort of off and running, but working as an independent contractor for someone else while I was also running my own firm. And what I found for myself very quickly, I loved that area of practice. It really fit into my background because these cases are all about medical evidence. And as a nurse, that part comes pretty easily. So I decided that I really wanted to build up my own practice in Social Security disability. And I started to do it at that time and slowly but surely went from zero cases on my own to many hundreds of cases now and a very, very busy practice. So it's been an interesting journey, but I finally reached the point where I feel like this is what I should have been doing all along, but I understand that it was everything else I did in law that really led me to this and really helped to prepare me for it. So I don't regret any of my past experiences, but I really have found my niche.
So all those things happened for a reason. You know, I count myself as a reformed litigator, although I still appear in court at times. So I can understand that feeling. You get to a point where while the law is interesting, the cases are interesting, the grind of litigation can get to you. And so I understand the need to look for something a little different. So tell us a little bit then, you started to transition from PI cases, personal injury cases, to Social Security disability cases. Talk a little bit about what's the nature of a Social Security disability case.
Oh, sure. Well, for people who may not have heard about it, which I had not, honestly, when I first got into it, when you pay your Social Security tax, everybody thinks about retirement, Social Security retirement payments, but there's also basically a disability insurance premium that you're paying. So the nature of these cases is that I have to prove that my client, because of health problems and the limitations really from those problems, it's not just their diagnosis, but how the condition affects them. I have to prove that they are not capable of doing the work that they've done in the past or any other kind of job out there. And that becomes a very interesting challenge. And one of the first challenges is getting clients to understand that. And I'll give you a good example. I've represented medical doctors in this process. And I have to explain to them that, you know, doctor, I have to prove that you can't work as a doctor anymore. And Social Security may even agree with me on that pretty quickly on in the process. But then I have to prove that you can't even work taking tickets in a movie theater or addressing envelopes in an office. And they're shocked, but that's the standard for Social Security disability. So the way the process works, it's very much an administrative practice, lots of paperwork, lots of deadlines. And you go through, most cases go through three steps where we apply. We get denied. That takes about 6 months. We appeal that. We get denied again in about another 6 months. Then we appeal the second time asking for a hearing. And right now it's taking 18 to 20 months to get the hearing scheduled. So ultimately, we will end up in front of a judge and I'll be presenting the case and the client will be answering questions posed either by the judge or by me, or in most cases by both, to try to prove the case.
Is that an administrative judge, under administrative law?
Yes. It's a federal administrative law judge, yes, who works for Social Security and does nothing but Social Security disability hearings. Yes.
Okay. Now, when clients come to you, they're not always coming to you with the belief that they're going to be denied straight off, are they?
No, not at all. And one of the things that I believe that informing clients is one of my top priorities, giving them plenty of information to understand the process, what's going to happen, and how long it will take. Now, most people come, unless they've, you know, done some reading, done some research on my website or been to, I do a lot of speaking engagements, been to one of those engagements. Most people are going to come thinking, you know, we're just going to tell my story right off and Social Security is going to see that I have problems and can't work and they're going to approve me for benefits. And, you know, I have to pretty quickly explain to them that that is not likely to be the way it goes.
Right.
And explain what the process is. And the really difficult part for people, which is completely understandable, is that disabled to Social Security means you cannot work. And so for the whole time we're going through this process, remember, people are not working. Now, you know, most people are not prepared for a 2 to 3 year period of time with no income. And it can get very dicey.
Yeah,
as you can imagine. Yeah.
I have a family member actually who is in that boat, and so I'm aware of those limitations and that challenge, because it does take a while for, as you've clearly outlined, for the process to go to run its course before a determination is made. And you know, if that individual, you know, they have responsibilities, they have, you know, families and children in some cases, and you know, how do you handle that situation? So I'm sure it's a challenge. I suspect also that one of the things that you have to do is oftentimes defend against the allegation that everybody who comes to see you is a malingerer. Help our audience to understand, although I would hope as attorneys our audience understands that that's not necessarily the case, but I think there's that perception in the public. Would you agree?
There absolutely is. And that is one of the worst misconceptions out there. There are certain, and part of it has come from some really bad publicity that the Social Security disability system got a couple of years ago for people who were abusing the system. But most of the people that I represent are not people who are looking for a free ride. They are people with serious health problems who would rather be doing anything but talking to me about filing for disability. They'd certainly, absolutely rather be back at work. And you know this when you see their medical records. You know, it starts with the interview. It really starts in my office with the intake, which is my staff, not even me. But it starts there We ask very probing questions to get to the bottom of what are your symptoms and limitations that really keep you from working. And then it goes to me, and I do more questioning, in more in-depth questioning, to make sure that we're not dealing with somebody who is a malingerer. And right. There are a few people out there, but not a lot. Right. And so it is a process, not so much to educate the client, because they know how bad off they are, but more in terms of trying to educate the public, because this is not about malingering. And certainly in the last few years, the judges are very, very thorough to make sure they weed out all the malingerers, because they are under a lot of pressure right. to make sure they don't wrongly award benefits to somebody.
Right. Well, having looked now at the practice area of Social Security disability law, let's talk about the mechanics of you arriving as a solo practitioner. When you went to nursing school and then law school. When you went to law school, did you have a sense then that at some point you might want to have your own firm, or did you see yourself working? You said in a policy right. situation to start with, but right. ultimately, did you see yourself, you know, working at a firm or long term as a policy wonk?
Yeah, initially I saw myself long term as a policy wonk, but like I said, that faded away pretty quickly. I never wanted to have my own business. I didn't not want it. It was just never a part of my thinking.
Just not on your horizon.
It was never there, even when I went out on my own. Because what happened was, I am, you know, what I call, and there's a book out there by this title, The Accidental Entrepreneur. I was in a situation where I was in a very small law firm, and my partners decided that they all really wanted to do something else, not as the group that we, you know, not in our group anymore. And I had to say to myself, well, okay, now you can either try to go find a job with somebody else, or you're just going to set out on your own. And I knew enough at that point to know I don't really want to be following somebody else's rules anymore. Yeah. I did that for a long time. Don't want to do that anymore. So even though I've never had this burning desire to have my own business or have my own practice, be a solo practitioner, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm headed. That's what I did.
One of the things I found, having gone to law school late in life as well, is that when it gets around to that point where you need to go interview for jobs, firms are frankly going to think twice about hiring somebody my age at the time.
Right.
And it's not so much age discrimination as it is a business decision. You know, are they going to take somebody who's got, you know, 10 years remaining in the workforce, or somebody who's got 30 to 40?
Exactly.
So I suspect that played a role to some extent.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So when you,
I really had, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. So when you did decide to go solo, you know, the small firm that you were with, a part of, decided to go in a different direction. Tell us about, you know, what were the steps that you took at that point? What were your challenges? What were you scared of? What were you said you were pretty solid ground in terms of the law, but how about running a business?
Oh, nothing. I didn't, you know, and even though I had been a partner in a small law firm, looking back on it, honestly, none of us knew anything about running a business, and we sure as heck didn't know anything about marketing a business. So I was sort of there with no really background to fall back on. It was a lot of trial and error. I started out sharing space. I had myself and a part-time paralegal, and I was in a space sharing arrangement, which was great, but I wasn't sharing space with anybody I could really go to say, wow, I don't know how to do this. You know, do you have any help? Or can you give me any help?
Right.
So what I did was I started to read a lot about just business management and marketing. And I found a small group of lawyers. One of the lawyers has a business that focuses on lawyer marketing and management for small firms. And I just tried to learn as much as I could, as quickly as I could, and implement it as fast as I could. It wasn't, I mean, it was not easy. I was, when you said, what were you scared of? I was scared of everything.
Sure.
You know, how am I going to pay the rent? I only have a part-time paralegal. How can I pay her? Am I sure I can pay her? Gee, what am I going to be able to pay myself? How am I going to get clients? Everything, you know, you name it. I was afraid of it. But I also knew I was driven more by the thought of, I really don't want to have to go to work for somebody else. Then I was driven by my fear.
So I better make this work.
So I bet I'm going to find a way. It wasn't even, for me, it wasn't even, I better make this work. It was, by God, I'm going to find a way to make this work. Not quite sure how, but I am going to find a way to make this work. And every time I've met an obstacle along the way, and I've met many, as every solopreneur has, that has really been my philosophy. I am going to make this work. And here's this obstacle, and I'm going to figure this out. And it might be trial and error, but I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to keep going. And that's exactly what I did.
So in over the course of time then, the Social Security disability work level starts to pick up. You start to get more clients. You start to have a little more breathing room. When did you decide that you needed your own space?
That was 7 years ago. So I was, geez, now I got to do the math. I was about 4 years into sharing space.
Okay.
And I had reached the, I had just reached that point. I had hired at that point. Then I had two employees and myself. We felt a little cramped where we were, and it was time to take that next step. And so I did.
How'd you go about doing that?
I'm trying to think how it worked. I got in touch with, or had been contacted by a lawyer that I had, we had been on opposing sides in cases, who had gone into commercial real estate leasing. And I contacted him and said, hey, I'm looking to go out in my own space. And it sort of went from there.
Okay.
Don't need, you know, I didn't, don't need class A space, don't want to pay for class A space, but something decent enough and to serve my needs. And, ended up taking initially a little more space than I needed, but that filled up pretty quickly. So, but again, it was that same sort of not paralyzing fear, but overwhelming fear of, uh-oh, what have I done? You know, can I make this work? Well, that was 7 years ago, and now we're about to move into slightly larger space. So it's absolutely worked
over time. So the trend is going in the right direction.
It's definitely going in the right direction. Absolutely.
So tell us now a little bit about your current staffing and how that breaks down and what their roles are.
So currently I have, as I said, this is paper intensive, deadline intensive, but it's not, the work is not necessarily work that lawyers have to do. So I'm the only lawyer. Obviously the hearings I do, but I'm the only lawyer here. I have a full-time paralegal and three full-time, what I call legal assistants. Now, here's the one thing that I did that worked out beautifully, but it's not typically, I think, how most of us think. One of my very first hires was as a receptionist / assistant who knew absolutely nothing about law firms or Social Security disability. But she has a fabulous personality. And that was what I knew I needed. I needed somebody on the phone that was sort of the first voice that the potential clients heard that had a really people-oriented, fabulous personality. And that's her. And so she's learned all the ins and outs of Social Security disability over the years. But one of the first lessons I learned was hire for personality first. And then, you know, people that are smart enough, they can learn the skills.
You know, I just had this conversation yesterday with somebody who was contemplating hiring someone. And we were talking about, do you hire for skill and then hope you get the right personality? Or do you hire for personality and teach them the skills? And I'm a firm believer of the latter, as it appears that you are here.
Right.
You know, absolutely. And particularly in the role that you are hiring for, you know, customer client relations, the front end of the house, so to speak.
Yes.
You want that person that everybody falls in love with and feels comfortable with and is responsible and dedicated, and you don't have to worry that they're sitting around doing the crossword puzzle on your time, and you can teach them everything else.
Correct. That's absolutely right. That is absolutely right. And even with skilled positions, like when I hired a full-time paralegal who has background in Social Security disability, and that was a great bonus, but she got hired based on her personality, not on her experience.
And let's face it, as solo and small firm practitioners, you spend a lot of time with your coworkers.
Yeah, you do.
And you better get along, because there's no quicker cause of problems in the workplace than personality issues.
You know, that's yeah.
You very rarely argue over, you know, how are we going to set up the filing system? But you're really going to argue over, you know, how are you behaving in the office, or how are you holding out this firm in front of our clients and customers.
Exactly. And you have to have, my staff works very collaboratively with each other. And when somebody needs help, they've gotten behind for whatever reason, everybody pitches in, you know, we'll help you. Let's get this done. And that's what you really want, because I'm not hovering over them. They have certain deadlines. They know what they are. I have certain expectations. We meet individually every 2 weeks to review where they are on cases, to go over, I use Needles as my case management system, and to go over their checklist and see what's happening on the cases. But I'm not hovering over day in and day out. It's up to them to get it done. And there's nothing better than being able to see that everybody understands the job overall is to move these cases forward and get them successfully resolved. So let's pitch in and figure out what we need to do to make that happen. And if you need help today, I'll help you, because I may well need help next week.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere, because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too.
So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. Let's talk a little bit about how you are set up from a technology standpoint. What role does technology play in this process? And what are you using to satisfy those needs?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider myself tech savvy in any sense of the word, but I have used Needles case management.
I'm not familiar with that. How do you spell it?
I got Needles, NEEDLES.
Well, just how it sounds.
Yeah, it started out, its name initially was PINS, P-I-N-S, personal injury something system. I forget what the N was for. But it was designed way, way back in the beginning as a case management system for personal injury cases. And then over time, they've added, you know, different case types. And I started using it very early in my personal injury career and have carried through with it ever since then. So that's really the backbone of what we do because every case is there. Everybody's got a checklist. Certain things have to be accomplished at a certain time. All the deadlines are entered. I can look at any case at any time and know exactly where that case is and what needs to be done next. So that's, we are very, very reliant on it, and it's a terrific system. I really enjoy it. We're able to add in to it, enter the standardized letters and forms and all of that stuff. It just makes life so much easier. That's probably as sophisticated, honestly, as we get when I think about technology. I use technology for marketing and social media and that type of thing. But in terms of our day-to-day existence, that's really the most important thing that we do. We scan in certain documents and keep those in the file in scanned form. I don't scan everything. The amount of paper that the Social Security Administration generates is enormous.
It's pretty much a paper-based system in a lot of ways.
Yeah. They have gone to electronic filing once you get to when you're at the hearing stage, and we can submit evidence prior to that electronically. But
the original application and the original appeal?
You can do that online.
Okay.
Most applications. There's some that you can't. They're slowly moving towards getting everything online, which would be great.
But you have a lot of medical records that have to go in as well and that kind of thing.
Yes. And so, you know, the we're able to utilize electronic format a lot, certainly a lot more than used to be able to do, you know, 7 or 8 years ago.
Right.
And that's great. But I know there are some firms that are paperless. And I looked at it, and I even looked at the cost, and I said, you know, given this is a volume practice.
Right.
I mean, to be successful, you have to do a very high volume of cases. So to go paperless, to get every single case, the whole thing scanned in, all the paperwork, it was cost prohibitive. So,
and I see this is a Windows based application.
Yes,
is Needles. So you're running Windows, and are you networked? You have all your computers tied together.
Yes.
You share a single Needles database.
We do. Yes,
and do all the backups and all of that to preserve your quality of the data.
Yes, absolutely. It's okay. Exactly what we do.
Well, then let's talk a little bit in the remaining time that we have about how you go about getting clients in the front door. As you said, it's a volume business, so you need to get a lot of volume through that front door. How do you go about doing so?
The a variety of ways, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, but as any business marketing person, doesn't matter what field they're in, will tell you, you know, I don't know one way you can get 100 clients. I know 10 ways you can get 10 clients each. And that's very true. So probably a third of my business comes from referrals on it from existing or former clients. And the key there, I mean, there's two keys. Obviously, do a great job, so they want to recommend you. But particularly for former clients, make sure you're staying in touch with them. So we have a newsletter. We send out birthday cards. We continue to send that out, even though we've won your case and it's closed. We send postcards. We do as much as we can, both direct mail and email, to keep in touch with people. So former and current clients, very big source of business. My website, big source of business. I do free seminars and I do webinars that are very basic, sort of let me tell you about everything you need to know about Social Security disability, to explain to the average person who may be thinking, I'm not getting any better, you know, I'm getting worse, I'm not sure how long I can continue to work, explain what this system is about, how it works, what we can do for them, and then get this person on my mailing list. Mailing lists are huge for me because I cannot tell you how many people I talk to that are currently working. They see that things are not going well. This may become an issue for them. It may be 6 months to a year before I hear back from them. They've now finally had to stop working. But I know if I keep my name in front of them, when the time comes to apply for disability, I'm the one they're going to call.
All right, so let's circle back here for a second.
Sure.
Your website, and we'll give the URL out in a little bit, has an enormous amount of information on it.
Yes, it does.
There's a ton of stuff to learn. I feel like if I just read through your website, I'm going to have a pretty good primer on what Social Security disability law is just right there. Did you do your website yourself, or did you have somebody do it for you? Or
I have a virtual assistant, and that means she's in Colorado and I'm here.
Right.
And she works with me on the website and the newsletter and our postcards, our mailings. That's really what she does with me. And so she set it up. And I'll tell you, I know one of the things you had mentioned earlier, where I'd seen that, Neil, you had written about things that you wish you had known and had not done.
Yeah.
Early on, I spent a fortune to have a website designed and put up. That was probably one of my biggest money wasters going.
Yeah.
I realized after the fact. Yeah.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
She put together for me a simple WordPress site. Very easy to use. She posts the stuff. I there were times when I did it and then it got so busy, I can't do that anymore. So she posts all the information, but it's very simple and it didn't cost the $10,000+ I paid to have the first website put up. So
yeah, I can't tell you how much money I spent on websites. I initially went with a large legal firm, if you will, that offered websites to their members. That was a complete waste of money. I then tried to spend some time rolling my own, as they say, and doing it myself, not on WordPress, because it kind of predates that era. That wasn't much better. And then I've had two or three other companies since then that have finally evolved my website. So it's Spotlight Branding that I'm working with now. And they have taken my existing site and rehosted it on a WordPress platform. So now I'm in the same boat as you are. The WordPress platform is fabulous for creating the website. And you can update it yourself or you can have somebody do it for you, as you and I are both doing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So just circling back here again for a second, when you said you do seminars and webinars. So tell us a little bit about both of those.
Sure. The seminars I do Two varieties. One is a free seminar I do every month at a local library. I advertise it in the local newspaper in the area. I do it in White Marsh, and I advertise it in the local newspapers in that area about Social Security disability and, you know, what it means and how what it takes to get benefits. So that I've been doing that for a number of years now. So I do that once a month. I advertise that through Facebook as well as the local newspapers. But then for the people that can't get to that location or can't make the time, I do monthly webinars, which I'm actually about to record so I can put it on my website and you can access it as you want to. But it's the same program. I just do it in a webinar format.
And when you do the webinar, what platform are you using for your webinar?
Go to webinar.
Go to webinar. Okay.
Yeah. That's worked out. That's easy. Like I said, I'm not a technical kind of person, but it's very easy to use.
Well, so I wouldn't sell yourself short here. I mean, you've talked about a lot of technology here, needles and your website and using go to webinar to do your webinars. And I'm going to ask you about your emailing list now too. So you maintain an emailing list. Do you have a special emailer, emailer like MailChimp or AWeber or something along those lines?
That's what we used to use, but we've progressed to the point that now we use Infusionsoft. But we started out, I don't know if it was AWeber or Constant Contact or MailChimp. It was one of those. And that worked fine, but then the email list got bigger and bigger, and there were other things that I wanted to do to try to segment it into, you know, these are current clients versus potential clients versus, in my case, providers, healthcare providers. There are some healthcare providers that refer us business, so I may want to send a different message to a different group, and we're able to do that a little bit easier with Infusionsoft. But you know, what I mentioned either, and I think they're all pretty much, from what I hear from people, they're all pretty much equal. MailChimp or AWeber or Constant Contact, very, very good place to start, I thought.
I would say the same thing. Infusionsoft is a very robust program and can do an enormous amount of work for you, but it does take time to learn. And are you doing that yourself, or is your virtual assistant helping you with that?
Yeah, my virtual assistant is helping because I did learn there were times, as we all had, when you first start, you got to do all this yourself because you don't have anybody you can pay to do it for you. But as time progressed and I got busier in the practice and more cases, et cetera, I really did need to bring in help. And that was, you know, that's always scary too. It's like, oh, another mouth to feed. But when you realize, when you weigh out, what is it that they can do for me and how much time will that free up? And what am I able to do in that time that I freed up? As long as that balance is in favor of you being more productive, more cases, et cetera, then it's well worth money, whatever you have to spend.
What role does social media play in your marketing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It really plays a big role. I poo-pooed for the longest time. I'm sort of embarrassed now to say this, but I was thinking, you know, I don't use Facebook. I hate Facebook. I'm not doing it. But then somebody reminded me, actually in a marketing group I was in, said, well, just because you don't like it, that doesn't mean your potential clients don't like it. And for me, I had to look at, you know, you go through this process of figuring out who's your ideal client. Well, my ideal client is a man or woman between the age of 50 and 60 who's basically worked all their life and they're now sick and can't work. And I did a little research on Facebook. Well, who are the biggest users? Some of the biggest users of Facebook are middle-aged women. And the light bulb finally went off. I said, you know, that's your clientele, or at least half of your clientele right there. And you better start looking at this Facebook thing. So
that's where your clients, that's where your clients are hanging out.
Correct. That's exactly right. And if it's not, the men aren't hanging out there, their wives or girlfriends are.
Sure.
So I started both, you know, set up the Facebook page and blog posts get put there. And I also do advertising on Facebook. So Facebook is very big for me. I get a really great response. And then I started a YouTube channel. And again, it was the same thing initially. Oh my gosh, I don't use YouTube. Are you kidding? But that's not the point. The point is people are searching on YouTube for everything. So this has taken a while. I, last year, after lots of fits and starts and didn't really get it going, I finally said, you know what? I'm going to hire a college student because they know how to shoot this stuff for YouTube. You know, in their sleep, they can do this right, and edit it. And that's exactly what I did. And I was determined that we were going to do 3 videos a week. They're not long, you know, 2 to 3 minutes about different aspects of Social Security disability and problems. And, you know, the frequently asked questions, what do I hear all the time? And you respond to that. It took about a year, but I am now starting to get a big response off of YouTube.
Took about a year and for you to get the response, or did you get all the videos up and running?
No, it took, we did it. We were dedicated 3 every week, and we shoot 3 and she'd upload 3. So we got a ton of videos there, and I'm still doing them. But it took about a year for me to start to get a good response from YouTube. But I just kept plugging at it because I said, you know what? I know that this is ultimately going to take hold. And sure enough, it did.
Are you doing anything to drive clients to the YouTube videos?
You know, now that's funny you should say that, because I, the marketing assistant I had, the college student, she graduated and, you know, went on to a full-time position, which was great. So I just brought in actually a young guy who has his own marketing business, and we're working together now. And that's just one of the things that we were just talking about.
One of the ideas that we heard from another guest not too long ago was using a Twitter account and having a recurring tweet, one for each YouTube video that you have in your, you know, your channel, and those go out randomly and consistently over and over and over again. And people see that tweet and then they click on the link and they watch your video. And that's a way to drive traffic to your video channel.
I'm writing that down as we speak. yeah, absolutely. I love it.
Great. Well, listen, Sharon, we've run up against the wall here and you've got to get back to packing boxes.
I do, yes.
This has been fantastic. I've learned a ton, and I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Tell our listeners what's the easiest way to get a hold of you and what your handles are on all these platforms that you have going.
Absolutely. So the easiest way is just to either call the office at 410-823-8200. Or send me an email, Sharon, Sharon, at SharonChristieLaw.com. And that's Christie, Christie. So Sharon at SharonChristieLaw.com. You can also get to my email through the website, which is SharonChristieLaw.com.
How about your Facebook and YouTube channels? Just real quick, in case people want to take a peek at those.
Okay, so I should know those off the top of my head.
Well, I'll tell you what, why don't you send them to me and we'll hook them up in the show notes so that our listeners can go there and can and see them there, okay?
Will do. That's
all right. Terrific. Well, thanks again ever so much for being a part of The Law Entrepreneur. Good luck with the move and let's stay in touch.
All right. Thanks, Neil. It's been great. I really enjoyed it.
Take care.
Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days.
and be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. And also don't forget to visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more about building your internet foundation. And they're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE.